The tapes were delivered back to the storage company the next day, and no one was the wiser. Analyzing the con. Because of lax physical security, the bad guys were easily able to pick the lock of the storage company, gain access to the computer, and modify the database containing the list of people authorized to have access to the storage unit. Adding a name to the list allowed the imposters to obtain the computer backup tapes they were after without having to break into the firm's storage unit. Because most businesses don't encrypt backup data, the information was theirs for the taking. This incident provides one more example of how a vendor company that does not exercise reasonable security precautions can make it easy for an attacker to compromise their customers' information assets. Mitnick message. Valuable information must be protected no matter what form it takes or where it is located. An organization's customer list has the same value whether in hard copy form or an electronic file at your office or in a storage box. Social engineers always prefer the easiest to circumvent least defended point of attack. A company's off-site backup storage facility is seen as having less risk of detection or getting caught. Every organization that stores any valuable, sensitive, or critical data with third parties should encrypt their data to protect its confidentiality. The new business partner. Social engineers have a big advantage over con men and grifters, and the advantage is distance. A grifter can only cheat you by being in your presence, allowing you to give a good description of him afterward, or even call the cops if you catch on to the ruse early enough. Social engineers ordinarily avoid that risk like the plague. Sometimes, though, the risk is necessary and justified by the potential reward. Jessica's story. Jessica Andover was feeling very good about getting a job with a hotshot robotics company. Sure, it was only a startup, and they couldn't pay very much, but it was small, the people were friendly, and there was the excitement of knowing her stock options just might turn out to make her rich. Okay, maybe not a millionaire like the company founders would be, but rich enough. Which was how it happened that Rick Daggett got a glowing smile when he walked into the lobby that Tuesday morning in August. In his expensive-looking suit, Armani, and his heavy gold wristwatch, a Rolex president, with his immaculate haircut, he had the same manly, self-confident air that had driven all the girls crazy when Jessica was in high school. "Hi," he said. "I'm Rick Daggett, and I'm here for my meeting with Larry." Jessica's smile faded. "Larry," she said. "Larry's on vacation all week."
"I have an appointment with him at 1 o'clock. I just flew in from Louisville to meet with him," Rick said, as he drew out his palm, turned it on, and showed her. She looked at it and gave a small shake of her head.
"The 20th, she said. "That's next week."
He took the palm top back and stared at it.
"Oh, no," he groaned. "I can't believe what a stupid mistake I made."
"Can I book a return flight for you, at least?" she asked, feeling sorry for him.
While she made the phone call, Rick confided that he and Larry had arranged to set up a strategic marketing alliance. Rick's company was producing products for the manufacturing and assembly line, items that would perfectly complement their new product, the C2 Alpha. Rick's products and the C2 Alpha together would make a strong solution that would open up important industrial markets for both companies. When Jessica had finished making his reservation on a late afternoon flight, Rick said,
"Well, at least I could talk to Steve if he's available."
But Steve, the company's VP and co-founder, was also out of the office. Rick, being very friendly to Jessica and flirting just a little, then suggested that as long as he was here, and his flight home wasn't till late afternoon, he'd like to take some of the key people to lunch. And he added,
"Including you, of course. Is there somebody who can fill in for you at lunchtime?"
Flushed at the idea of being included, Jessica asked, "Who do you want to come?" He tapped his palm top again and named a few people, two engineers from R&D, the new sales and marketing man, and the finance guy assigned to the project. Rick suggested she tell them about his relationship with the company and that he'd like to introduce himself to them. He named the best restaurant in the area, a place where Jessica had always wanted to go, and said he'd book the table himself for 12:30 and would call back later in the morning to make sure everything was all set. When they gathered at the restaurant, the four of them plus Jessica, their table wasn't ready yet, so they settled at the bar, and Rick made it clear that drinks and lunch were on him. Rick was a man with style and class, the kind of person who makes you feel comfortable from the very first, the same way you feel with someone you've known for years. He always seemed to know just the right thing to say, had a lively remark or something funny whenever the conversation lagged, and made you feel good just being around him. He shared just enough details about his own company's products that they could envision the joint marketing solution he seemed so animated about. He named several Fortune 500 companies that his firm was already selling to until everyone at the table began to picture their product becoming a success from the day the first units rolled out of the factory. Then, Rick walked over to Brian, one of the engineers. While the others chatted among themselves, Rick shared some ideas privately with Brian and drew him out about the unique features of the C2 Alpha and what set it apart from anything the competition